All right, guys, welcome to the E-Commerce Paradise podcast. Today, I have a special guest on the show. His name is John. He's been high-ticket dropshipping for quite some time now, and I've really had a chance to talk with him and help him through his store startup process. Welcome to the podcast, John.
Thanks, Trevor. It's a pleasure to be here. I'm usually the one watching these videos, so I've never actually taken part. So it's pretty cool. It's exciting.
Yeah, man. It's all good. Happy to have you on board and really excited to talk to you about your success with high ticket dropshipping. You've been doing this for some time now, and I just want to start off, just kind of give the viewers and the audience a idea about your story, your background, and how you got into high ticket dropshipping in the first place.
Yeah, well, I mean, I guess I started off about 2 years ago. I figured I needed to be able to work from anywhere I want, you know, just for, you know, family reasons. I wanted to be able to work from home, wherever that was going to be. So if we wanted to relocate once a year, and I could just keep, I could be my own boss and be independent instead of having to try and, you know, reinvent myself every time we moved city. So, what I did was I'd read the 4-hour work week, and then I was just like, you know, wow, you know, one of those, it was like a aha moment for me. And I was like, oh my God, that's, I need to figure out how to do that. So I tried to figure out what dropshipping was. I came across the term, you know, and I was looking at it. So I did, I think, what everybody does when they first discover what dropshipping is. They get a store, they go onto Oberlo, and they start checking AliExpress stuff and trying to sell that online. I didn't really know what I was doing starting off, because, you know, dropshipping is not something that you can just figure out by yourself. You need a course, or you need somebody to say, this is how you do it, and this is how not to do it. So I actually, my first store was terrible. I mean, I lost money. I think I made like $50 sale in a month, and I'd spent a lot more just trying to get those ads, because I was trying to drop ship $50 items. So, you know, it wasn't a really great. But I figured there must be an easier way, so I tried to. I think I enrolled in a few different courses, actually. And then when I finally found that there is a blueprint out there, and there's a couple of blueprints. I got a niche, and I followed the procedures, and I did everything that everybody told me to do, and it's now starting to work. I mean, I launched my current store on July 31st last year, so it's been a year exactly, and it actually didn't work out very well. I was losing money every month. I made two sales. I made one sale last year, one sale, and then I made one sale in February, and then I was like, how long can I keep this up? You know. I think most people would have quit before, but I really needed to make it work. So I think then in March, I think it was on the 5th of March, because I was looking at my Skype, you know, recap, and I saw our last call was on the 5th of March. And since then, it's working. I figured it out. So yeah, so I still have lots of room to grow, because, I mean, there's still lots of things I need to do, still lots of improvements I need to implement, but it's working now, so that's a relief.
That's great to hear. Yeah, I know, when you finally get it working, it's just like the most amazing feeling, like, okay, this actually works. Yes, let me do it. Yeah. Let me dive into it. I remember that feeling when I first got my sale back in 2011, very first sale I ever made. It was a bicycle, and I was just like so psyched. I was like, wow, somebody in New York literally bought this thing off my website. I'm in Los Angeles. I never talked to this person. They just drove the e-commerce platform I was using. It's called eCreator. It's kind of like, it's like an eBay alternative, but it's kind of like Shopify before Shopify. And so The cool thing about them was they actually drove Google Shopping ads to the listings. Shopify doesn't even do that unless you use an app and you pay for it yourself, but they actually paid for it. So it was pretty cool. So I was just lucky. I stumbled upon that. And then, you know, I sold the product and they bought it, and like we had the supplier, and they shipped it to the customer and made like $35 or something, because it was a low price to bicycle, and it worked out, man. I was so happy about that. That feeling is so awesome. I'm just so glad that you're, you know, finding success with it now and stuff like that. I want to go back a little bit though and talk about, you know, not specifically your niche, but like how you found your niche. Like, what were the steps that you took to decide on your niche, and like how did you decide it was like the right one for you and that you wanted to pursue that as opposed to something else?
Well, I mean, I followed, you know, there's a certain criteria that there is a blueprint, you know, there is a way of finding a good niche. And the first time I did it wrong, I took a guess. I figured, I think this will be a really good niche. And I went for it. And it was like the prepper niche, like survivalist prepper gear, you know, like, what was I selling? Survival kits, you know, like if there's an earthquake and you've got this go bag, you know, that, cause I figured that's going to work because, and it is a big niche, but I didn't really know what I was doing. So I went straight into it and, I couldn't find suppliers with map, and I didn't know what I was doing. I was feeling around the dark and it was a failure. So I started again and I figured I would, you know, use the let's say the niche selection criteria that you teach in your course. So all of the, let's say the criteria were, let's see. So is it really heavy? So if it's going to be really, is the shipping cost, because everybody in the US expects free shipping now. You know, is that going to take up all of the margin? You know, let's see the price point. So I was looking for anything between, I was looking for something around $1,000, right? Because I know that, let's say people say, you know, anything over $500, there's still, you know, a bit of margin. I was thinking, let's go for about 1,000. Turns out that the niche can go from anywhere between 500 to, I think my highest item is like $5,500. So like, you can, it can vary. But what are our criteria? Actually, I did make a few mistakes. I even following the criteria, because being in Italy, I didn't use a VPN. So when I was looking to see how many other dropship stores there are, I found, I think, two or three. And I thought, I think there's room here. And then it turns out there's 40. So it's insane. There's so many. So it's really saturated now. So I think that's also where some of my sales are going. They're going to everybody else that's trying to get the same portion of the pie. But yeah, I mean, I did use a criteria. I think I started off with 100 random options, and then I started applying all of the criteria. So price point, weight, are there US suppliers? Because obviously I wanted to ship from the US because I serve in the US even though I live in Italy. And what else was the criteria? How many stores there were, if they were dropship friendly. And I know I've seen your videos where you go and verify whether they are dropship friendly or not, because you know if there are other stores doing it, then you can too. And I followed all of those steps, and I found my niche. I only made that one mistake about using, I didn't use a VPN, so I didn't find Google Shopping, all of those other stores that were already selling all of the things I want to sell. But I did it. So I got let's say 9 out of the 10 criteria correct, and I found my niche. And so even with that amateur mistake, rookie mistake, I made it work anyway. So
yeah, that's cool. I think honestly, I won't say every niche, but most niches are very competitive now. And you know, the more time goes on, the more people enter the marketplace. Some stores fail, some stores kind of just stagnate, some stores grow, you know, and it really depends on the person, you know, if you're growing as a person, if you're learning marketing, if you're learning better ways to reach your audience, talk to your audience, you know, and the better ways to close sales, conversion optimization stuff, better ways to do back end sales and stuff like that. You're going to beat the competition. So no matter how competitive a market is, even if it's something like furniture, which is crazy competitive, you can still compete there if you just learn these really important conversion optimization and sales techniques, some of which the big companies just can't offer. And like you were saying before on the expensive shipping stuff, some of these companies, they're just not willing to do it, you know, whereas you can come in and you can, if you're willing to handle these things, then you can definitely do it. So it's awesome that you chose your niche and that you got going with that. A really quick, let the viewers know which e-commerce platform that you use for your store.
Yeah, well, I use Shopify. Okay. I mean, I believe isn't it Shopify is what the Ferrari of of platforms anyway. I mean, it's been easy for me because I'm useless with computers. I'm not very tech savvy, and I could figure it out. So if I can, anybody can. It's fairly. I wouldn't say it's cut and paste, but it's you know. Foolproof.
Yeah, I agree. It's a lot easier to use than the more complicated platforms.
Yeah, and they have their support system, their support chat. If there's ever a problem, 24/7. and they're really, really, really friendly, really helpful. They're always cheerful. That's great.
Yeah, they have a great company culture. That's true.
They really do. Yeah, they really do. Like I actually don't mind contacting their support team because I know it's going to be a good experience, which it's really unusual. In Italy anyway, if you try to pick up a phone call and try to call like utilities or whatever, it's just, you know, it's going to be like a 2-hour argument and then you're not going to get anything resolved. Then you're frustrated for the rest of the day. It's a disaster. But Shopify have it figured out. So it's cool.
Yeah. Yeah. I think Canadians in general are just really nice people. So being that they're based in Canada, you know, maybe they got that going for them too, right?
Yeah. That's what they say. Yeah. It's very important as well when you're considering what platform to use. If you know that they're going to be there for you and they're going to like cheer you up as well. They're really helpful. They're always really happy. Very, very, you know. So it's a really good experience. So for me, that was very important. Not understanding anything about computers,
Yeah, the full support. I like the managed hosting feature because I used to use WordPress and WooCommerce, and it was hosted on GoDaddy servers. And sometimes, like, it seemed to happen like at least once a month when we were getting really steady sales and traffic, is the whole website would just go down randomly. Like, I would wake up one morning with like 5 emails, like, "Hey man, your website's down. I want to order a bike." And I'm just like, "Dude, are you kidding me?" Like, I wonder how many people didn't decide to call, you know, like, and just went to another website. So I had to hire a developer and have them on hand at least once a month to like fix our like files or something, just some weird things that would happen that I had no idea how to control. And so anyways, that was just kind of a headache for me, where, you know, I'm sure there's like better hosting and there's managed WordPress that people can use for, you know, WooCommerce and stuff like that, but I still prefer Shopify just because it's an all like managed solution. I've even used Volusion in the past. I've used BigCommerce, and as far as like simplicity goes, Shopify in my opinion is just way easier to use, especially like you said, for people like you and I that just like we're kind of tech savvy, we're getting there, but we're not like crazy developer status tech savvy.
Yeah, like once you take on this job, you think that okay, you just have to learn how to sell something, but you have to learn you wear like 15 different hats in this job, so, and you do have to then sort of get in the trenches also and look at the code. So Shopify makes it as easy as it can be. So
yeah, their coding system called Liquid is a lot easier to use, in my opinion, than WordPress uses PHP. So if you want to do custom stuff with WordPress, you have to learn PHP, which is a pretty complicated code. Honestly, I don't even know PHP. I never took the time to learn it because by the time I was about to, I decided to sell that site and get on with a Shopify store instead. So, but I know Liquid pretty well now. It's actually really easy. They have a whole library, you know, so for people thinking about like which platform to use, you know, for custom stuff, Shopify is awesome. So. Yeah. Cool, man. What were some of the things that you did to optimize your store? You know, like it takes people a long time to finally get sales. Can you go through maybe just a few of the biggest things that made the biggest difference in your store?
Yeah, well, around January, I actually changed theme. I was using a standard theme for the store, and I ended up buying Shoptimized the theme. Just because it had all of the things that I would normally have had to use add-on apps to get anyway. So, and I think a lot of the Shoptimized themes, the aspects that they have, like a lot of it was centered around urgency, social proof. So there's like, you know, there's the pop-up that says, you know, Trevor has just bought this like 1 hour ago, or, you know, like 4 people are looking at this product right now, or the like 5 sold in the last 24 hours. And it's, you know, it does something to you, you know, when you're looking at it, because I know when I'm looking at buying something and I'm thinking, okay, there's 2 left. Do I really want it? Because it's now or never, you know, or maybe it can sort of help the people make the decision right there instead of just saying, okay, I'll look back later, and then they don't. Not everything on the theme is, I think, is high ticket drop shipping. You know, I think if you were to turn on, like when I got Shoptimized, I thought, okay, there's all these features. I turned everything on and it was like a Christmas tree. It was just, you know, there was like flames flashing and colors and bing, bing, bing. And it was hard to watch. But I mean, if you're selling something like a $50 product that's trending on Facebook and it's the hottest thing, like fidget spinners or something, I mean, you can just turn that thing on, it'll sell itself. It's great, but maybe for high ticket drop shipping, it's a bit. You have to try to be a bit more selective. But Shoptimize has all of those features, so you can choose whichever one you want. So I think a lot of the social proof was what made it, because I wasn't making any sales. I didn't have many reviews. I didn't have any, there was no pop-up saying, you know, like this item has sold in the last 4 hours. So there wasn't anything to tell the customer that this guy is legit. The store is good. It sells. Other people are using him. So, you know, if and take a credit card. But now it does. And I think that's made a big difference. You know, because people have to feel safe. You know, people have then written to me on the chat and said, how do I know you're legit? You know, and all I can say is I'm legit, trust me, give me your credit card and find out. You know, so I mean, it's understandably, there's a lot of skepticism. So the more comfortable you can make people feel about using your store over somebody else's, the more likely you are that they're going to pull the trigger. So.
Definitely. I agree. And for the listeners and the viewers, I wanted to throw out there that I've done a full Shoptimize review and breakdown, so you can kind of understand this thing a little bit more. If you just type in ecommerceparadise.com/Shoptimize review into a web browser or iPhone, you can see that review. It's really in depth. And like John said, it's one of the best themes for conversion optimization. You can use it for high ticket dropshipping, use it for AliExpress dropshipping, print on demand, all this stuff. There's a lot of different features in there. So you don't want to definitely turn everything on at once. You probably want to just turn on a select few features and then split test them and see what converts better for your audience and stuff like that. So Shoptimize theme is also the one I use. And I actually teach that, how to use that, that theme in the course, in the masterclass that I teach. So if you want to learn exactly how to set that up for high ticket dropshipping specifically, how I do it for the case study, so you can go to the masterclass, ecommerceparadise.com/masterclass. So let's get into the next question, John. Now there's a lot of different Shopify apps people can use out there to enhance their store and stuff like that. A lot of them are used for conversion optimization. Other ones are used, you know, for other things like customer service. What's the number one Shopify theme or Shopify app that you use and recommend you like the most out of all of them?
I think probably when I started using Shoptimize team, I started removing some of the apps because in Shoptimize, the social proof pop-up was one app. The countdown timer was another app. So I had like 4 or 5 different apps that once I started using Shoptimize, I actually removed because Shoptimize does them all. So I think it's a collection of all of the social proof and urgency that works. I don't have one app that I've added on that I think is what makes a big difference. I had been using the Bold upsell app. And in theory, I really liked the idea. But I took it down a few days ago, and I'm probably going to replace it with, they have another app. It's like an upsell app, or I don't know if they're going to call it an after sale app, because instead of suggesting an accessory to go with the item during your checkout, it's an add-on at the end. So it's like it goes as soon as you've checked out, you go, okay, you've just bought this product. Here's what you can do. And would you also like to add this? So you've already paid for it. You've already checked out. So the sale is complete. And if they want to then add the accessory, you don't have to go back credit card details again and check out. It's basically a one click. Yes, I'll have that too. And then, so that will help. So I think I'm going to put that on this week sometime.
What's the name of that app again? The one you're talking about?
It's one of the Bold. Bold upsell. I think Bold upsell app is the one that is the upsell during checkout, which I just took down because I didn't see an increase in conversions and it was an extra step for people to check out.
Okay. So after the checkout is when they do the upsells on this app.
So they have one called, I don't remember what the name is, but they have this app and it's free and it's called Bold Brain. And Bold Brain works with all of the other Bold apps as well. So it sort of intelligently predicts what your customers would like to do based on their behavior on your store. And within that app, it also explains that which apps will you work well for upselling or after sale upsells. But Bold anyway, yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome. You know, you can grow your store in a number of ways. It's either get more suppliers and add more products, or you can, you know, try to reach new marketing channels, do more content marketing, that stuff, or you can sell more stuff or sell more expensive stuff, raise your average order value. Mm. And like you're talking about, man, that's one of the best ways to do it is to sell more things to people that have bought from you in the first place. So that's awesome. That's a great tip. Thanks, John, for that. And also, if you don't mind talking about what your results have been, I know you kind of talked about that in the beginning, but can we get more, a little bit more in depth as to what like your progress has been since you first started? I know you said the first year you made like maybe one sale, but what's it been like after that?
Yeah. Well, so last year in the first 6-7 months actually, I only made one sale, which was just on, it was actually I made two sales. I made two sales, it was like 5K, just below five, it was like 4,900. And the margins were very small because I was losing money every month. So in really, I didn't actually make any money. And then in February, I made one sale, which I didn't even break even in February. And then we had a, you know, then I reached out to you and said, Trevor, I need your help. I don't know. I know I'm doing everything that I'm supposed to be doing, but it's not working. You know, what do I do? And we had a 1 hour call, and that was on the 5th of March. And it took me about 15 days to implement about 90% of all of the things that you, cause I remember, cause when you looked at my site, you were like, oh, John, what are you doing? Okay, change this, then do this. I had a list of, I think, 15, 20 things to do. And once I started implementing them, around mid-March, I started making sales consistently. And since mid-March, actually, I woke up this morning and there was a sale. So I'm at 108K sales since the end of March. So let's say beginning of April would be April, May, June, July. So 4 months and a few days, and it's 108K sales.
Awesome.
I just closed. Yeah, I'm averaging about 25K sales a month now with about 25 to 30 orders a month, which is almost like one a day. Yeah. July, the month is closed. It was my record month because I'm just like, since March, since I made all of those changes that you gave me, I made a few sales closing March. Then April, I had a full month where I was, you know, it was having full effect. And then May, June was still, it just kept improving. And then in July, just month just gone, I made 32,500 sales. And for the first time, I broke 10,000 visitors. So I'm hoping it just keeps going.
Yeah, that sounds great, man. I'm so glad you're on the up and up with your store.
Yeah,
you know,
and, yeah, it's a relief.
That's wonderful. You know, I love that 30,000 mark is really cool, especially for your first store, because with high ticket dropshipping, you're maybe like 10, 15, 20% margins at the most, but you know, $30,000 in sales means about $2,500 to $3,000 in net profit margins, you know, at the end of the month. And that's just amazing. Like, that's I think quitting your job status.
Yeah. I mean, if that was consistent, yeah, it would be like, it would be very, very, because obviously at the end of the day, my goal is to be able to do this full time and then start a second store, because then like in half a day I could manage two stores, you know? And I already work from home. So, I mean, it would be a very, very, that's what I want to do at the end of the day. I've only been making sales for 4 months, so it's too early to start talking about, you know, quitting the day job and stuff. Also because I'm living in Italy, it's a bit more complicated, because if I don't work, I'm not entitled to certain things like free, let's say, like a doctor, and so you know, the pension is other, there are other things to look into, but the goal is to be able to be financially independent and location independent. And this is a huge step forward for me. So, so it's great. I mean, it's been 4 months consistent sales, and 4 months it's consistently improving. So the signs are all very positive, and I'm hoping August is an improvement on July. And I still have a list of things that you recommend that I do. I still have to do them. So I'm still working off that to-do list, and it's working. So
awesome, man! So great to hear.
So,
that kind of leads, yeah, definitely, man. I'm looking forward to hearing more about like your results as well in the future. Like you said, 4 months, like it's still early, man. You've got, you know, another 5-6 months till the end of the year, and then we've got, you know, all of 2019 as well. So
yeah,
it's just getting started.
And you know that at the beginning of the year, I thought, okay, this is my year. It was like 1st of January. I actually downloaded one of those like printable calendars, you know, just every day is a different month. And I actually started off, I had here like 2018 goals. You can't really see that. And down at the very bottom, I had, I don't know if you can see that, 50K sales, it says. Nice. 50K sales. And then what I tried to do was I tried to break down the 50K sales divided by like 12 months. How many sales would that need to be on an average order? And I was thinking, it's going pretty bad. So if I can turn this around and make 50K sales, I might make a very small profit, but at least I can prove the concept and then build it from there. And then I'm at 108K sales now in 4 months. So, I mean,
that's some powerful stuff right there. Goal setting is one of the best things you can do. And you did the right thing. You wrote it down, you know, you highlighted it, you made it real. You made it so real to yourself that you manifested it in your own life. I think that's some really cool law of attraction stuff right there. And that's powerful. You know, listen, you know, take notes, guys. That's how you do it. You know, like, you might find like all sorts of weird confusions and doubts in your mind about whether something works or not. And really it's just your belief about whether it works or not. So if you find a course out there that's like step-by-step, like the masterclass I teach, and you jump in there and you do it and you take it and you do every single little thing I say to do, and then this can happen, you know, like it will happen. Mm-hmm. This just pretty much will happen. You just have to like see it. You have to surround yourself with it and then believe it. And once you believe something, you manifest it. One of my favorite books that is all about manifestation is The Secret. And so The Secret is all about like law of attraction. It's about like putting yourself in that place, physically feeling the emotions that you're going to feel in your heart and your mind, breathing, like all that stuff, that the physical emotions you're going to feel when you have that, you know, success. And so that you make it more real for yourself, you manifest it. And Napoleon Hill also wrote an amazing book called Think and Grow Rich that I read when I was probably 21 or 22. It just changed my life absolutely, because he really does talk about making things real, because you have to, you know, believe it, right? And then you can achieve it. You have to like really like know that it's going to be true. Anyways, so definitely check those books out for the listeners. And John, this gets me right perfectly into one of the last questions, which is how is working from home changed your life? I know you were talking about just before the interview, we were saying how you've been able to figure out how to make a remote working agreement with your employer. So you've been able to work from home and it's allowed you to work on your dropship store. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if I was still working in the office and I would leave the house at 8 o'clock in the morning, get there by 9, leave at 6, get home at 7, walk the dog, do the dinner, there wouldn't be any room for dropshipping. Otherwise I'd be doing maybe from 10 to midnight. And not a lot gets done by the end of the day, because I mean, my best hours are the mornings, and I don't think I would have made any progress, or very, very, very a lot less progress. By working from home, I basically gained 2 hours a day, because I don't have to leave the house. You know, I don't have to iron a shirt. That's all time. Because for me, I used to think, when I used to get the train to work, I would walk to the train station and I would think, okay, I'll get the train. Then I walked to the train station and I was thinking, that's dead time. I mean, if I could be, I used to think, even like if I was able to iron my clothes on the train to work, which is a ridiculous concept, but at least the time would be more useful. But there's not, you can't, you can read a book, or you could try to learn stuff using podcasts or that sort of, but you can't sit down and apply and build concepts. You can't be on, you know, on Shopify things, because there's no Wi-Fi anywhere. So it's dead time. So just by transitioning to working from home, I can now, if I want to use my hour lunch break, I can just get on my store, you know, do a few things, respond to emails, do whatever I want to do. And as soon as I'm off the clock from my day job, I'm already then online for the store. There's no transition. There's no time lost. And I'm home all day. So my computer's on the whole time. So for as long as I'm awake, let's say, I'm online. So it's very efficient time. And now I just have to try to figure out how to cut out those 8 hours a day that I feel is also dead time. But anyway, that's a different story. Because I could be a lot more productive working on my business rather than somebody else's business. But
that's all right.
That's probably for next year.
a lot of people, when they're just starting out, you know, they have their day job and you have to have kind of a full-time, you know, income of some sort before you start your own business. So you have a budget, yeah, you know, so you can invest that budget into your business. It's just kind of how you have to do it in order to find success, in order to stick with it for the long run. So I think you're doing the right thing, you know, and everybody kind of has to go through that. I know I went through it for a full 3 years before I was able to quit my job. You know, I was working like before work, I was working after work, like you said, weekends, I was building the site, but I also figured out how to get into the sales department at the company I was working for and get my own cubicle in the corner where they couldn't see my computer screen. So between phone calls and stuff like that, everybody thought I was just typing up emails to customers. I was actually building my e-commerce site and just not saying a single thing about it to anybody. The other salesmen were like watching stupid YouTube videos and stuff, and they were getting caught by the managers and they didn't even think a thing about me because I was being nice and quiet and taking phone calls right away. So I was being a good boy, you know, at work and stuff like that. And, doing that allowed me to escape faster and, just do it under the radar, which is really cool. But really quick, you were able to do this without having to go through that. And you're able to start your remote work agreement with your employer. Can you go a little bit over that just so people maybe like who are interested in that and want to figure that out can gain from your experience with that, setting up a remote work agreement with your employer?
About trying to transition. Well, I mean, in my case, I mean, everybody's case is, you know, like situation is different, and certain jobs, what you need to be, you know, you need to be around your team and your colleagues. But I mean, I don't, I work as a financial analyst. My team, I've got a couple of guys in Manila, somebody, two people in North America, one in Dubai, and then I'm in Europe. So I met my boss once when I flew over to Tampa to see him. But other than that, I could have been sitting in the office in Florence or in my house or on a beach resort with Wi-Fi. And no, so it wasn't a huge transition for me. But because of, basically the way it works is because I work for an American multinational, they already understand the concept of remote work, the flexible work agreement. So it wasn't a huge, it wasn't a huge shock for them, you know, because, you know, lots of companies in the US have maybe like 2 days a week where you can work remotely. And so it's not a huge leap to go to 5 days. In my case, because my wife has a high profile job and sometimes we relocate, what would happen was that, you know, if we had a really good opportunity to relocate, because it would advance our lives, it could still mean that I would have to maybe quit my job, relocate, and then start again and look for another job there. When I'm working for this company, there were lots of changes. And what can also happen in big companies is somebody leaves, and instead of hiring somebody, then you get their job as well. So you get your job and you've got their job. So then you've got like so much responsibility, you know, you feel, you know, you're being torn, pulled from everywhere. So it was a problem because I was running two different roles with wearing two different hats, you know, two different emails. Like I was basically two different people in the company. So when I found out that we were going to relocate again, I figured, you know, what I'll do is I'll ask. I don't even know if the company does this as a policy, but I'm going to ask. And then they realized when I asked, they were like, let me think. If John leaves, because he's basically saying, I really like to continue working. I basically put it to them and said, look, I love my job. I would like to continue working, but I have to work remotely because we're moving 300 kilometers away from here. Is there any way we can work this out? Because I don't want to leave, you know, and what do you think? Basically, they figured it out that to replace me, they would have to hire two people because I was doing two jobs. So then they realized how much that would cost to hire new people, to train two new people. And they said, yeah, probably, let's give it a go. And they were saying, you know, I'm not sure if it's going to work. Let's see. Maybe we'll think about it in the future. And I said, well, I mean, it's not really that negotiable because I have a deadline, you know, because we're going to be, we pay a mortgage in Florence, but when we relocate, we have to keep paying the mortgage, but we have to pay rent. So we can't keep both places. So it's not financially viable that I stay. So I have to leave. So why don't you just give me a trial? Let's try for, I don't know, 6 months or try for a year, and let's see how it works. If you're not happy, we'll discuss it then and see what we can do, but just give me the chance. And he said, okay, you know, let's try for a year. And then after a year, I mean, everything went fine. I still did my job. There were no like huge dips in productivity in my role. So they realized that I was actually working from home and not just, you know, doing nothing and sitting in my pajamas watching Netflix. So they realized that, I mean, I was still working. I was a responsible guy and, you know, the job got done. And after a year, it came around to be renewed and they just signed off for a renewal. There wasn't even a negotiation or a review. It was like, okay, sure, you know, just as you were. So it worked. So, I mean, I think if anybody is in that position and they want to, you know, look to start working remotely so they can get back those extra 1 hour or 2 hour commute so they can apply it to something productive like starting their store, have the discussion. Just say, look, this is what I need to do for personal reasons. I need to be at home, or at least I need to be able to be home a few days a week, if not all the time. Why don't we try 3 months, 6 months trial? And if you see that productivity hasn't waned, you know, maybe we can look at doing it on a more like full-time basis. I mean, what are they going to, they're going to say no, at least, you know, at least have the conversation. I mean, what I did was I found out that when I was home, I was working more than I was in the office because I felt like people are obviously thinking that I'm not working. So I was working longer hours. I was having more meetings. I was trying to prove to everybody, like, here I am. You see, I'm online. I'm sending these emails. And look, it's 9 o'clock in the evening and I'm still, you know, I'm still available. It took me nearly a year to remember that I don't have to prove that I'm working. The job is getting done. The results are there. As long as I do a good job at 5 o'clock or at 6 o'clock, if I'm no longer available, I mean, that's okay because I would have left the office by now anyway. So I actually, in the first year, I was working longer because I felt like I had to prove that it was a good idea. But I was able to rein that back and use the time more productively to make shit happen, as they say.
That's great. I'm so glad that you had that experience. And I'm sure the listeners really appreciate that, you know, you were able to share that experience right now, because, you know, anybody that works for a company like you do can definitely do something like that if they just, you know, aren't afraid to ask and they put their mind to it. And like you said, like, prove yourself maybe for the first year, you know, and work overtime a little bit. And then after that, rein it back in and establish, you know, the respect upon your time more. And then I'm sure that at that point they respect your time a lot because, like you said, the job's getting done. They don't need to pay the overhead costs of having an extra office and having all the equipment for you and stuff like that. So it's less cost for them. You're now using your home office, which is really cool. So it's a win-win, you know, it totally is.
Yeah. And also my office, because it's still part of the American multinational, but it's in Italy. So there is still a bit of an Italian mentality. So they weren't all very accepting. But I think I was the first guy in the office in Italy to get a flexible working arrangement. And once they saw the potential, now like half of the office have at least 2 days where they have like flexible work arrangement. And now they've got a smaller office and they can rotate. So nobody has a fixed position. Like, it's not desk, John's desk or Mary's desk. It's desks. You come in, you put down your laptop and you work. And, you know, everybody knows John, let's say on Friday, isn't in the office, so I'm going to use his desk. So it's like a rotational office. It's great. It's like almost like a remote working cafe.
Yeah.
So it's good for them.
I was going to say, it's like a co-working space, man.
Yeah. It's like a co-working space.
It's just funny because they have co-working spaces everywhere out here in Thailand. It's very popular for the entrepreneurs. Like, it's probably just people like you too that work remotely for a lot, you know, different employers all over the world, tech companies, financial companies, you know, all sorts of stuff. That's interesting to know that the financial company has the same workspace as the co-working spaces have. I didn't know that, actually. That's kind of cool.
Yeah, but they just don't want to call it like a co-working space. They still call it the office.
yeah, you got to maintain the frame of you go there and you work. You don't go there to hang out.
Yeah,
exactly. Cool, man. Well, that's awesome, man. And your story is so inspirational, and it's really cool to see your success so far, and I can't wait to learn more about your success. Can you offer like one parting piece of guidance to people who are just starting out? You know, maybe they were in your position a year and a half ago and they want to be where you are now. Like, what's the number one tip you would offer them?
The absolute number one tip is get a mentor. Find somebody that knows what you're trying to do and somebody proven that has done it before, and ask them for help. I mean, you don't have to say, please help me, and then you don't pay them. I mean, you just look for whether it's your course or whether it's just coaching calls or somebody like you. Find somebody that knows what they're doing and knows how to give that information to you in a structured way where you have clear action items, and then go and do the work. Because it's not, when I started, I thought, this sounds too good to be true, but also because I was thinking of it almost as like a get rich quick scheme. I figured, like the movie The Field, if you build it, they will come. That's sort of what I thought I was getting into. I'll build a website and then visitors are just going to show up and they're just going to buy from me. I'm going to sit back and watch the money come in. Yeah, that's not exactly how it works. Yeah, that's not how it works. But I mean, because there are so many things you have to learn, and this stuff you don't learn in school. You don't learn there are some books, but they're more conceptual. There's no manual out there. You need to find a mentor or a course that can say, step one, this, step two, this, step three, this. And that way you can just say, okay, thanks. It takes the guesswork out of it and just do the work and put in the work exactly as you're told. And you will make huge progress. Because I spent almost a year, like basically feeling around in the dark, trying to figure it out. I did take other courses and they were absolutely instrumental, courses for email marketing and AdWords. And I've done courses on everything and they've all been very, very, very helpful. I think the number one thing is find a mentor and just do exactly as they tell you to do, because that's when you can just take the guesswork out, apply the rules, the criteria, and it'll work. If you put in the work and you follow the criteria, you will see results. I mean, obviously there are waiving factors, but find a mentor. That's my parting piece of wisdom.
Yep. I wish I would have known, about the power of mentorship back when I first started. I honestly am very lucky to have found, a business mentor when I first started. When it was 2010, mid-2010, I was all about starting a skateboard company because that was like the one thing I wanted to do is start a skateboard brand, My friend had started one, and so it kind of gave me the impetus to start one. And I talked to him and he said, look, man, you need to find somebody who's going to help you with business, because if you haven't taken business classes, you don't know how business works. Starting a business is going to be ridiculously complicated. You're probably going to fail. And so the first thing I did was start talking to people about it. Like everybody around me, I just like talked to about all my ideas about business. And one of those guys, he got really lucky. He was a locksmith. He's in his like 50s. He's a business owner, longtime business owner his whole life, self-employed. And he was like, you know what, man, your idea sounds great. Let me go buy you a website domain. And I was like, what? A website domain? Why would I get a website domain? This is back in 2010. And I didn't really understand the power of websites yet. I just had kind of gotten into Facebook. And so like he bought the domain and I was just tripping out, and he came up with a name. He called it Beatnik Boards. And I thought, okay, that's kind of a weird name. I don't even know what that means really, but let's just go for it. Like, I mean, this guy sounds like a go-getter. And I was just, I was just down, I knew that like having a mentor in business was so cool because none of my family is in a business. None of my family is like entrepreneurial at all. So like, I couldn't go to family. I couldn't go to any of my direct friends. None of my friends were really entrepreneurial that much. So he was like the only guy that like I had. And so I went and met with him like every single weekend at Denny's and sat down and we talked business ideas. And finally, like we went through a lot of struggles trying to get the first startup going. But then when he finally saw this niche, these like little single speed bicycles, kids were riding around North Hollywood, like in these huge packs, like 100 kids were like jamming down these roads. And I think they're still pretty popular like that. But he was like, you know what, man, like let's go sell those things online. Let's figure out this drop shipping thing. Because apparently someone at GoDaddy had talked to him and he asked them, hey, how can I make money online? He said, hey, check out drop shipping. So this all kind of just fell together. We found a supplier in LA and we had to buy like kids bikes up front just to get the account with them and all this crazy stuff. And we got the account. I was just really lucky, man. Like everything fell into place. I found that eCreator thing I was talking about. And they actually drove Google Shopping ads. So like you were saying, like you can't just put up a website and expect people to come. You have to drive traffic. But I just got really lucky that I found a website builder and I didn't even understand what was going on, but they actually drove traffic with Google Shopping ads. And this is back in like 2011 where like I had no idea how Google Shopping ads even worked. I knew AdWords existed, but I didn't really know how it worked. And I just got super lucky that we started getting sales. And like, there you go, man. Like the number one thing for sure getting started is getting a mentor of some sort. He was able to supply me with the credit and the capital I needed to get started. Like I didn't have a credit card back then. It was maybe like a $500 limit. Like I would have never been able to afford these products without him. He had credit established. So he got us a credit card, like $5,000 limit or something for the business. And we were just off to the races at that point, So Yeah, for sure. I agree 100%, John, like getting a mentor, man, is awesome. And couldn't have done it without him, you know, really lucky.
I'm actually still running my store without a credit card.
What? How do you manage that?
Well, because I'm not a US citizen, I don't have a social security number, I don't have any credit history, they won't give me a credit card. So when I actually had to fly to the US to open a bank account, because, you know, they don't open bank accounts that easily, remotely. So I flew over and they said, we'll give you a debit card. And I was like, okay, well, can I still make purchases online? And can people, you know, like charge, can people charge me like a credit card? Yeah, as long as you have money in your account. So I did have to like transfer, I think I transferred like $2,500 over, because I was at the time, obviously, I wasn't even expecting to make a lot of sales. I was thinking, well, okay, let's just, it needs to be in there just so if I get an order, I can fulfill it immediately instead of waiting a week for Shopify to then, you know, send me the funds. And I got one or two sales, but I didn't get like five sales all at once. So I wasn't caught out, because obviously it would have been better to have like 5 or 10 times one item. So I got one or two sales and then that money came in. And so with the margin, my balance kept slightly increasing and then my sales started increasing. So it sort of rose together. So I was lucky. So I use my debit card, because they won't give me a credit card yet. So
it's kind of a good thing your sales kind of took a little while to go up, because now you're more well prepared for the sales when they come in now, the big ones.
Yeah.
That's cool, man. Well, John, it's a crazy journey, man. It's been a lot of fun talking to you today. Thanks for sharing your entire story. I'm really excited about your success in the future. And for the listeners, if you guys are looking to get started with high ticket dropshipping, I have a niches list. It's kind of the best way to get started, because if you don't even understand what high ticket dropshipping, but you really want to get into it and you're starting to really get used to it, niche research is the first step of the entire journey. So get the niches list at ecommerceparadise.com. Just click the link at the top for the niches download, or go to ecommerceparadise.com/99niches, 99 profitable niches. And they're not just like fake BS niches. These are actually real niches that real stores are selling. So it's a really good list to start with. And like John was saying, get a mentor. And I offer mentorship, so you can click the link below. The niches list is down there. You can get coaching, ecommerceparadise.com/coaching, ecommerceparadise.com/masterclass is where you can find the high ticket coaching masterclass. John, thank you so much for being on the podcast. Really appreciate it, man.
Thank you, Trevor. It was a pleasure. It was a really pleasure. And thanks a lot for your help.
Yeah, anytime. Hey, excited about to see your results in the future, man.
Yeah, I'll keep you posted.
Cool. Sounds good. All right. Have a good one.
Great. Take care.